Hi, this is Aaron Newcomb, and on this episode of Floss Weekly, Simon Phipps joins me. We're going to talk about BitCore. What's new? What's going on? They have a lot of updates to talk about. It's coming up right now on Floss Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Floss Weekly with Aaron Newcomb and Simon Phipps, episode 369, recorded on January 5th, 2016. BitCore 2.0. This episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by Braintree. Even the best mobile app won't work right without the right payments API. That's where the Braintree V.0 SDK comes in. One amazingly simple integration gives you every way to pay. Try out the sandbox and see for yourself at braintreepayments.com/floss. And by DigitalOcean. Simple and fast cloud hosting built for developers. Deploy an SSD cloud server in 55 seconds. Try it today for free. Visit DigitalOcean.com, and once you sign up, be sure to enter the promo code FLOSS in the billing section for a $10 credit. Welcome to Floss Weekly. I'm Aaron Newcomb, and this is the show where we talk about free Libre open source software. That's right. Randall is away this week, so I'm filling in for him as always. I do on many occasions fill in for him while he's out on a cruise or visiting relatives and all those various things. So we hope that he and his family are doing okay up in Portland. But I also am not by myself, which is wonderful because it would be a very boring show if I was. But I'm joined by my co-host, Simon Phipps. Simon, how are you doing?
Hello. I'm doing pretty well, actually. Thank you. So, yeah, Randall tells me that he should be sitting in Half Moon Cay drinking a rum and diet at the moment. So that sounds pretty good to me. I'm here in the UK where it is very dark. It's been raining quite a lot. And I'm sitting in my office waiting for the excitement of hearing about BitCore again.
Yes, excellent, excellent. It's been so long since I've talked to you. We've talked on email, but I don't think I've actually seen your face, talked to you. I'm trying to look more like you. I don't know how it's coming. I'm trying to grow this out, you know, look a little bit more like,
You know, like you. I've got the glasses. Let's see if I can do the glasses for you.
Oh, that'd be great. There we go. Oh, there you go. See that?
Is that
we
better?
Could be brothers.
Yeah, I look can't actually see you anymore, but
I just need to grow my hair out just a little bit more. I'll work on that for next time. But we actually used to work together at Sun Microsystems. So,
remember Sun Microsystems? Yeah. That seems like decades ago.
I know. I call it the good old times now, even though it was really only about 5 years ago. But it seems like forever.
Change the name so that it isn't associated with the evil they're doing against Google.
That's right. That's right. Absolutely. All right. Well, this show isn't about us. It's about our topic, our guests, and bringing cool and interesting projects, hopefully, to folks that either haven't heard of them or want to learn more about them. And this show is no exception. We're going to be talking about BitCore, which has to do a little bit with Bitcoin, I guess, and hopefully some open source libraries. I must confess, I don't know a whole lot about it, so I'm going to learn a lot today. Simon, what do you know about BitCore? Anything?
Well, they've been on the show before, and I was one of the co-hosts when they were on the show before. So I've heard the story already, and I am desperately keen to find out what's new and what's worth having them back on the show for again. And I do quite a lot with thinking about Bitcoin. I could bore you with it sometime, but I won't. But I do have a few Bitcoins of currency lying around waiting for the price to go back up to $1,000 again. And I also happen to think that the most important thing about Bitcoin is actually the blockchain and not the Bitcoins themselves. So anyway, we'll see how that goes in the show.
Excellent, excellent. Well, you'll be my crutch today. I'm going to lean on you for your in-depth knowledge of BitCore. I actually was at a hackerspace in between the holidays, and they had a Bitcoin processor set up that they had hacked together and built, and it was just sitting there in their hackerspace, and you could insert your dollars and get Bitcoin back, and they were showing me how it works. I might build one. It was really fascinating. So we're going to learn a lot about BitCore today. It's going to be great, but before we get to that, we need to thank our sponsors. These are the people that make this show possible, so we definitely want to do that. And first up is Braintree. That's right, Braintree. Developers around the world have embraced Braintree V.0 SDK as the easiest way to add secure mobile payments to their apps and websites. No matter what the payment type, and this is interesting for today's show, Braintree accepts it. They accept Apple Pay, Android Pay, PayPal, Venmo, credit cards, even Bitcoin. And if something new pops up, Braintree will support that too. It's the same payment solution used by Uber, Airbnb, GitHub, so you know that it scales well and runs great. It includes simple, secure payments, so code you can integrate into your particular app in minutes. The developers, don't worry, they've got you covered. They're taking days to integrate your payments with Braintree. It's done in minutes. If you don't have time, you can give them a call and they can even handle the integration for you and walk you through it. The Braintree code supports Android, iOS, JavaScript clients, SDKs in 7 languages, .NET, Node.js, Java, Perl, PHP, Python, Ruby. So whatever you want to program in, they've got you covered. It's elegant code, clear documentation, 10 lines of in-app code to make this thing work. Now, Braintree's giving you an easy way to accept multiple payment types with one integration. Integrating it into your app is as easy as inserting a few lines of code. They want you to try it today. You can try it, try out their sandbox and see for yourself at braintreepayments.com/floss. That's braintreepayments.com/floss. And we thank them for their support of Floss Weekly. All right, now we can bring on our guests. So let's bring them on right now. We have Chris Kleeschult, right, and Braden Fuller. I almost messed it up. Braden Fuller. And they both work at BitPay, but they're here to talk about BitCore. Let's start with Chris. Chris, where are you speaking to us from?
I'm speaking to you from a cold and sunny Atlanta.
Cold and sunny. I don't know. It might be. That sounds pretty good to me right now. It's raining here in Northern California as well. And Braden, where are you speaking to us from today?
I'm also in Atlanta.
Excellent. So are you guys like right next door or something? You knocking on the walls? Yeah. Or like?
Pretty much. We're in the same office here. So
that's awesome. Before we get started, I am curious because I know right now at our hackerspace, we actually have a few people that want to pay for their membership with Bitcoin. And so we're setting up a payment service. And so one of the companies I was looking to set that up was BitPay. And you guys both work at BitPay. So I'm curious right off the bat what the relationship is between BitPay and BitCore. We probably talked about that on the last show, but let's just get it out again for people that may have missed it.
Yeah, sure. So, Chris, go ahead.
Well, I mean, BitCore is what our payment platform will be running on, or is currently sort of running on, and it's basically the core of what we do here. So we integrate Bitcoin into and we extend it, and it's sort of like the core of what we do here. I guess the short of it. Braden, do you want to expand on that?
Yeah, sure. So Copay, which I think there was a previous Floss Weekly episode on, is built using the BitCore library. And then on the server side, it uses the inside API to query everything about the blockchain. And that's also using BitCore to do all the synchronization. So it's basically pulling all the for a wallet, you need to know the balance of addresses. And so what Insight does and what BitCore does is create an index for all those Bitcoin addresses so you can easily query the balance.
Okay, awesome. Thanks for the overview. And what is it exactly, Braden, that you and Chris do for BitPay?
Okay, so I work maintaining the BitCore library and many of the other since this last episode, the library or BitCore has been split up into 2 separate modules, and so we have different functionality for like the P2P network. The core functionality for creating transactions and some others. So I work on reviewing pull requests for those, adding new features, and making releases for those. So that's me.
Okay, and Chris, what do you do?
Well, I work directly with Braden, and I was sort of new to the company, or am new to the company, and I was sort of brought in to help out with this BitCore software, because originally, if you look back, I think it was episode 303 that we talked about BitCore before. That was Ryan X. Charles, and he was going into the Node.js portion of BitCore, which is certainly important. But what we wanted to do is bring in the C++ shared library from Bitcoin Core itself. So I know it's very confusing, Bitcoin Core, but that's the software that most people, probably 90%+ of people run. And so what we did is take that C++ and made it a shared library and then extended that. So, you know, we brought some of those C++ functions into the Node.js world so that we could use that. So that's primarily what I was brought in to help out with is that C++ library.
Excellent, Chris. And Chris, how did you hear about Bitcoin or what inspired you to get involved?
This is my dream job. I can't be happier about, first of all, being here with you today, but also working at BitPay, because I'm fortunate enough to live in the area that BitPay is headquartered in. And I've been a proponent of Bitcoin since 2011 when I heard about it on Twit with Leo. And I think it was the security podcast that you guys have. And I heard, you know, I learned about it then. So, you know, when Leo was mining, I guess he found a Coinbase or he actually found a block using CPU miner, which I thought was absolutely fascinating. So I sort of emulated that and you know, the rest is history. And then I found out about this job years later, but it was just a perfect fit for me. So I feel very fortunate.
Yeah, that's awesome. I think it's really cool that you actually, you know, heard about it or started getting interested in it because of, you know, Steve Gibson and Security Now and hearing about, yeah, you know, this little thing, Bitcoin, and how interesting the Bitminer process was and all that. And you got involved and now you're actually working for a company that does this as its, you know, its primary business. So I think that's really, really cool. Braden, real quick, how about you too? I mean, is this just another programmer job for you, or what got you interested in working for BitPay?
So about 2 years ago, I did a search because I knew I wanted to work in Bitcoin. So I did a search and ended up finding BitPay and was very excited to join the team. So it was definitely very intentional.
Yeah, awesome. Braden, you mentioned some of the new functionality and features, so why don't we go into that now, because folks can go back and listen to that episode where we talked about this before, but what's new right now with BitCore?
Okay, yeah, so about a year ago, in December of 2014, I think, Manuel and a few others of us went through and redesigned the library's API to be a little bit more user intuitive, so that you know, things like a public key and a private key and transactions and scripts and stuff like that, all of the core primitives of Bitcoin were you know, we came at it from the point of view, okay, well, if we're going to start over from, if we were going to look at this from with you know, we could basically change any API that we wanted to, what would we do? And so we reorganized the API to be the most intuitive as we thought possible. And a major part of that was, you know, separating the public key and a private key, so that, you know, there are use cases in which a public key is only available, which is also a very good security enhancement, because you don't have to share your private key. And then address validation and stuff like that. The address class was created, and one of the cool things about when we did it, organize this, is that, you know, JavaScript isn't necessarily a typed language. However, there are a lot of advantages to having a typed language. So we tried to add, you know, to have these core classes be, you know, like a public key is when you construct a public key, it's actually validating that it is in fact, it does fit on the elliptic curve, and so that there has a lot of it, you know, it basically, you know, helps narrow bugs, or, you know, reduce the number of bugs that might be hard to track down later. So that was a big part of the redesign of the API redesign, and that was we released that as the 08 release, and then we iterated on that to where we are currently for the library, which is 013.10, I think, possibly 11. And in the meanwhile, we've also been working on the full node implementation. So we've always had the functionality to, or BitCore started off as just as a library, and so we are always using like RPC or the P2P protocols to actually interact with Bitcoin D. So when Chris came along, he really helped out with having the bindings or exposing the bindings from Bitcoin D directly from C++ into Node.js. So we can actually communicate directly to Bitcoin D without having to use RPC or the P2P network, which there's a lot of advantages there because we can add new API methods as we need them, and there's like a 20 times speed improvement in terms of just querying a block, because we're essentially just getting it straight from the disk and then it goes directly into Node.js. So that's pretty much what's new. And then we released that as BitCore 1.0, and then the library became its own module. And then we also have the BitCore node module, which is all that functionality. And then BitCore wraps together the node inside the library and a few others as one package. And that was released as 1.0, and then we had a 2.0, which was more or less just a small API change between 1 and 2. So that's pretty much what's new on there. So
excellent. Well, just to keep this, I want to make sure that we're clear on how this works. There's, you mentioned Bitcoin D. Yep. And so what's the relationship between Bitcoin D and BitCore?
So we actually pull in the source code from Bitcoin D, or otherwise known as Bitcoin Core, and then we apply a patch on top of that to be able to compile as a library, and then we use that library to have another set of C++ code that binds to those to some of the functionality that is exposed. And then we directly give that to Node.js. Chris may actually be able to go into a little more detail about the relationship there, but
yeah, absolutely. So this is the core question. This is the question that a lot of people ask when they're getting into BitCore itself. And if you take a look at full node wallets like Armory or even the Bitcoin Core wallet. Those guys have to rely on a daemon, a standard Unix daemon, or otherwise a piece of software that has to run in the background. And so what we want to do is not make that a separate requirement, to make it extremely user-friendly. And so what we want to do is integrate that long-running code, or that backgrounded code, directly into BitCore as a node, so it's sort of transparent to the user. And so someone can literally build a startup based on the BitCore software that we provide, because it's all open source and it's provided under the MIT license. So they can start a BitCore node, and they can interact directly from Node.js or JavaScript directly into the node. So there isn't any separate setup of a Bitcoin node, a full node, if that makes any sense. And I can go into what a full node is if you're interested, or if you don't know. But that was the major hurdle when you use products like like the Armory wallet, is that you have to run this full node, and it's a separate deal and all that. So we wanted to remove that requirement.
Great. So give me, who's using this? I mean, obviously you said BitPay's using it to some degree at least. I mean, who else would be using this? Give me an example, maybe, of a company that's using this, or a project that's being developed using BitCore.
I'm not exactly sure who is using it, but we do have a few people who are taking a look at the project and submitting pull requests, to fix bugs and whatnot. But our goal is, I mean, because we are creating a very the address index that we are creating adds an additional amount of syncing time, and it adds an additional amount of block of database storage. It is very much useful for a heavy use a node or a kind of a super node where you want to be able to basically query the balance of any address. So anybody that, you know, that is interested in being able to do that is going to be able to, you know, use BitCore.
Okay, great. Just out of curiosity, what language is BitCore written in?
So yeah, the library is in JavaScript, and all of our APIs are in JavaScript, and then the bindings, the Node.js bindings are in C++, and then Bitcoin Core is also in C++, which we pull in.
Okay, I have a little bit of a mixed background. You know, I have an infrastructure background as well as a little bit of programming and a lot of other things, but I'm kind of curious what kind of hardware specs are we talking about? Are the applications that would use BitCore, are they going to be CPU intensive, memory intensive? It doesn't seem like they would require a lot of storage, but what kind of system would I need to set up to get this running?
Right, yeah. So initially, it's CPU intensive, and it's mostly CPU intensive initially, because when you first download, you have to sync up with the rest of the network. And then once you're synced up, it actually is fairly CPU unintensive, as well as working on it's somewhat memory intensive as well, depending on the query. But we're actually working on improving that so that it's not doesn't require so much memory. But the biggest requirement is disk space. So for testnet, it's actually a lot smaller and a lot easier to sync. But on LiveNet, it requires upwards of 100 gigabytes for today's blockchain.
That's really interesting. I wouldn't have expected that it would require a lot of disk space. I thought it would be more processing. But I guess that makes sense. I mean, you said also that there was a 20x improvement in this version, or maybe that was the .8 version. I don't know. But since we've talked last, there's a 20x right. improvement. What's contributed mostly to the 20x? Is it just code fixes and streamlining in the code base? Do you see the impact of that? So, okay, so I'm going 20 times faster. That means I'm going to require more, the CPU, load is heavier now because it's running faster, or I'm just kind of curious.
So, yeah, the CPU load would actually be a lot less. That's what contributes to the speed increase. And the speed increase, it isn't necessarily in the library itself, but it's in the relationship between Bitcoin D and the BitCore library. So, you know, instead of having to query over an RPC interface, we're just basically, you know, directly calling to the C++ code. So that's where the big speed improvement is.
So I'm sitting here while you're talking, digging around on GitHub, trying to find out who does stuff and what's going on. Tell me about your community, I see you guys. Who else works on this code?
So we have a few people here at BitPay that are working on it. Patrick Nagurny has also helped out quite a lot with the architecture for BitCore, the node. And then we have a lot of community contributions for the library over the last year or so. And that's mostly been, doing bug fixes, adding features. A couple of people have used it for doing a few altcoins. I think Namecoin has been one it's been used for. I don't know to the full extent that's working. There's been a lot of functionality that's been added that we haven't necessarily made it a priority at this point. But the most of the SPV functionality, which is simple payment verification. So there's forget the BIP number, but a Bitcoin improvement proposal was what BIP stands for. But there's a BIP that basically describes this process in which wallets can do limited validation of the blockchain without having to download the entire blockchain. So there's been some contributions to add this thing called Merkle block, which is basically a much smaller block that has a proof of... It basically proves that this transaction, that irrelevant transaction exists in a block without having to have the entire block data. So some of that's been added. There's been there's a couple of open pull requests on BitCore node right now, which are also various bug fixes with addresses and stuff like that. So it's been pretty exciting to see all the community contributions in terms of finding bugs and fixing those, because you know that's really the advantage that you know developing things using open source methodology, is that you know there's so many more eyes on the project to find potential problems. So
right. Yeah, it seems to have been pretty quiet over December, I noticed, from looking at most of the graphs here. So are you just using Git governance for this, taking pull requests and making a decision within your company about them, or do you have some larger approach to governance for the project?
Yeah, so, I mean, for bug fixes and stuff like that, it's fairly straightforward because it's, you know, it's easy to pull in if it's a bug patch. You know, one of us will take a look at it, and review it, and you know, make sure everything's working correctly. For sort of the higher level goals, we definitely have the priorities of what's developed and what are new features that comes directly from BitPay.
Right, and the things that people are using this for, is it mainly about Bitcoin as a currency, or are there people who are doing interesting things with documents, with program transactions, right, with distributed devices? What would you say is the most interesting stuff that's going on?
So it's, you know, it's primarily designed around currency because it's designed to work with Copay. However, we've been working on other projects which are, you know, putting, Manuel, who is also working on Bitcore, had a website, or he has a project called Proof of Existence, which basically creates a hash of a document and then puts that into the blockchain as a timestamp. So one of our and there's also another benefit of that is you can actually create consensus. So instead of just putting documents, you can actually create consensus based off of including these hashes into the blockchain, so that you can prove that something existed, and then also prove that you can also establish a new consensus logic based off of what has existed and what exists before what. We actually have we published a white paper called ChainDB, which documents a little bit of that. And one of our goals with Bitcore Node was to architect it in such a way that adding plugins to do things like this it's one of the primary use cases of Bitcore Node, and being able to have such close relationship with the Bitcoin core code itself, is that if we need to create new indexes for, you know, say hashes that exist in the blockchain, we can definitely do that, and there's no performance, we can do it very quickly. So that's kind of one of the motivating factors is to build applications on top of the blockchain, and then be able to, anything that's going to be CPU intensive or needs to access a lot of data, we can put that as close to the blockchain as possible so that we can expose it to the apps that need it.
So can I ask a follow-up question to that? Because I know I'm a little bit of a noob when it comes to this. As I mentioned, I'm a hobbyist programmer, but you mentioned blockchain. And this may have been covered before, I don't know, but just for my own benefit, can you explain what blockchain is and why that's important?
Yeah, so a blockchain is basically a set of transactions, and those basically gives a sequential order to those transactions in a way that can be handled across many distributed nodes. So one of the things with a distributed system is that you have the problem of double spending. And so what a blockchain does is it gives you basically a single sequence, so that once something has happened, it has happened and it can't happen again. And the way that does is basically every block references the previous block, and then there's proof of work that is required for that block to become valid. So if someone wants to rewrite history, they'd have to redo basically a year's worth of work, or you know, several weeks worth of work.
Interesting. There's a couple of questions from the chat room I want to get to before we lose them or run out of time. Isol had a couple of questions. The first one is, would I want to use Bitcore to implement my personal wallet, or would something more like a Bitcoin transaction system, like a Bitcoin bank, use this?
That's a great question. And this is one of the things I wanted to mention about you know, who could use BitCore, because this is a perfect application for somebody that wants to use it for their own personal wallet versus having to rely on something like SPV, which Braden mentioned was simple payment verification. So you could actually take BitCore, run a BitCore node with the BitCore wallet service. It's included within BitCore. And you could actually host all of your copay wallets behind that. It's personal. It's you. You're running it yourself. You're not relying on any third party whatsoever. And that is one of the main things that we wanted to point out from the last copay talk that Stephen Pear and Matthias did, is that copay is a perfect match for BitCore and BitCore wallet service, which is, like I said, inside BitCore. And so, yes, this is it's a perfect application. We wanted to target hobbyists and people that wanted to experiment with the actual Bitcoin blockchain and the Bitcoin and what Bitcoin can do. And so that's a perfect application. But one of the things that Patrick Nagurny did that Braden mentioned, he's one of the people that we also work with, is he built this service architecture on top of BitCore to make it very easy to implement a service. So if you're a Java programmer, you're familiar with interfaces, and the service architecture is very much like an interface. You can just plug in a new service and off you go. And so it's very extensible in that capacity.
Would there ever be an application or a need or a use for BitCore to write something that's not necessarily Bitcoin related? I mean, I think you mentioned that there were some alternative currencies that perhaps were using this, but is it always going to be? The reason I ask is because, I mean, the Bitcoin, one of the great things about Bitcoin is it has been written so well and it works so well that would there ever be a reason to use BitCore or something else to build off of Bitcoin and make a completely different service, something that's not necessarily currency related? Or am I just dreaming?
Yeah, absolutely. That's one of the reasons why we undertook this whole thing, is we wanted to make Bitcoin extensible and highly usable to people. They can plug in new software. One of the things that BitCore does is it allows JavaScript developers, which, you know, I venture to guess there's many more JavaScript developers in the world than there are idiomatic C++ developers. That's just my take. So it's bringing the Bitcoin ecosystem into a much wider audience. And so, yes, I think you know, one of the things it does is from the get-go, is provide this service architecture and provide JavaScript developers. You know, I come from a Ruby background, but I was still very much in the JavaScript world doing web apps and that kind of thing. So, you know, you can think of a lot of open source developers as having a foothold in JavaScript, no matter what they do. I can't imagine, you know, if you're a Python guy or Ruby person, that you wouldn't have some exposure to JavaScript and be able to at least try out Node.js and that kind of thing. So,
yeah, cool, very cool. Brayden, you mentioned earlier, I want to make sure we get to this. I think you answered this, but you may have, our audience may have had to have been listening closely to get the answer. And Esol asked this earlier, so I wanted to make sure we get this out. Another question from the audience. He says, the C++ shared library ported to Node, is it a C++ shared library ported to Node.js, or is Node.js application calling out to the C++ code? And I think you answered that earlier, but can you explain the relationship between those two?
Yeah, so the we actually compile Bitcoin, and then we link it into we compile Bitcoin, then we compile the bindings, and then we link them together, so that it is what is it's basically there's an API for Node.js for add-ons, and we're basically compiling a .node file, which you can using the standard, you know, require a JavaScript file. You can actually just require this compiled .node file, and it exposes more or less what would it behave just like a JavaScript API.
Okay, so I'm actually very interested in that question that Aaron was getting at a moment ago. How would someone get started with this stuff? Because, you know, Bitcoin is big and scary. You can easily, you know, you're sitting with this vast community of people. You're dealing with a blockchain that's in use by millions of people. Where would you start if you were going to go explore an application that was using BitCore?
Okay, so yeah, I would say that, you know, if you're interested in doing development, a great place to start would be to take a look at the BitCore library's transaction class, and you know, basically go through the processes of building a transaction. So, you know, in that process, you kind of learn about, well, how a blockchain works, what an unspent transaction output is, why that's necessary, what the process of unlocking that and then spending it to a new output. All that would be, you know, there's not an application that's not going to be dealing with that. So it's a great starting place if you're interested in doing development. On the other side, if you're more interested in running a node and you have a wallet that you want to run and you want to connect it to, or say you have Copay and you want to connect it to your own BitCore wallet service, or a really good place to start with that is just to get a full node running, sync it up, get Insight running, get the BitCore wallet service running, and connect Copay to it, and then start doing transactions. And we actually have some pretty good docs on the BitCore.io website for guides on setting up a full node.
Right. But I mean, presumably, if I'm going to go play, there has to be some sort of sandbox or some kind of toy money that I can use. So, you know, surely I'm not going to go straight in there hacking transactions on the Bitcoin blockchain.
Right. Yeah. So there's actually two networks. Yeah, I forgot to mention that. So there's the testnet network, which was added quite a while ago, which basically has, you know, you can. For development, it's perfect for that, because you can play around, do transactions. The money doesn't mean anything, it's a lot faster to sync up. So there's a lot of advantages to doing that. There's also which we use fairly regularly is another network or a sub network of testnet, which is called RegTest, which you can basically, you know, instead of, if you're doing application development and you have to wait 10 minutes for every block to confirm, it can be, you know, if you're testing that functionality, it can take a little while. So what RegTest enables is basically being able to build blocks right after each other, so that your tests and your application development can speed up.
Right. Yeah, and go right ahead.
Oh, sorry, Simon. What I was going to say is we also have something on BitCore.io called the Playground. BitCore is a JavaScript library, and it runs inside the browser. So you could actually go to this playground that we have inside BitCore.io, and you can actually build those transactions and use the transaction class, just like what Braden was saying, and interact with the testnet directly without downloading anything. And to get testnet coins, there's things called testnet faucet, which people will mine coins for you, and they will provide you coins for free. And you know, they just ask that you return them if you're not using them anymore, and it's pretty nifty. So you don't have to download anything.
Right. Is there any mining at all in this software, or is mining completely out of scope for the activity?
I mean, we're running Bitcoin Core, which does have the mining functionality. It's not necessarily a use case that we're primarily looking at wallets, but you can definitely use this for mining, because I mean, it's constructing a mempool, and you can get, you know, you can get blocks, a block from it to start mining on. However, a lot of the mining code would actually be done in a with separate software that's going to be optimized for finding those hashes.
Right. Well, you need to use a nuclear reactor to power a warehouse full of FPGAs these days just to get, you know, a fractional Bitcoin. So.
Yeah.
If you could even do it with FPGA, I think you'd have to do it with a pure ASIC.
Yes. Yeah. So, and I've often thought, actually, that there are some other applications I would like to do with the blockchain. For example, I would like to have a distributed document repository that I would like to write with the blockchain. And I would like to, in an Internet of Things, have some sensors logging their sensor data using a blockchain. Is that the sort of application that I could hack with this code, or am I going to have to go somewhere else to go and explore those things that wouldn't involve Bitcoin-style proof of work? They'd use some other token to allow transactions to take place.
We have a tutorial that goes into including document hashes into the blockchain, into the Bitcoin blockchain. I don't know if that's specifically what you mean. Exactly, but it is definitely something that we've thought about.
Yeah, I'm thinking more about using both altcoins. You know, if I want to have my own coin, I've often thought that the only reason that we have proof of work is because of the scaling necessity of Bitcoin. And I've wondered whether we could have some other token used to authorize the writing of a block. I'm guessing that to do those sorts of things, I've got to go programming outside the scope of Bitcore.
Yeah, you would definitely have to. Yeah, yeah. You'd have to. I mean, but there are a lot of starting points that you know that you this would be a good starting point because, you know, one of the things we've talked about is that you know supporting different altcoins like Litecoin, and it actually you know if you developed an application say on top of Bitcore and using the Bitcore API. It would be very simple to basically update the bindings instead of binding to BitcoinD, bind to Litecoin, and then you'd automatically have that application available to both networks.
Right. So, in terms of community, you know, what are you missing? Who would you like from? We've got quite a big audience who are going to be listening to this broadcast. What sort of people do you want to come join in?
So yeah, finding bug fixes is always a big one. Also. Maybe going into this area of different, different altcoins and supporting those is also something that could be fairly interesting to take a look at. But yeah, bug fixes and whatnot is really where most of the time I think is well spent.
And also, we would really like more people to actually run a full node using Bitcore. There's only about 6,500 full nodes out there on the Bitcoin network, and we'd like to see more. Out there, the more peers on a peer-to-peer network, the better, as far as we're concerned. So, even if you don't contribute to the project directly with code, you can still run a full node, and you can do that through, Linode or Amazon Web, AWS or any of those, and it can be done very cheaply. In fact, Braden and I have both run full nodes on something called Gandhi, Ghandi. I think it's Gandhi.net. And I think we're running for less than $15 a month. You can run a full node on the Bitcoin network. And so that's a good place to start if you're interested.
Right. Have you thought of getting it up there on Red Hat service? Because they're offering some free accounts up there where you could maybe run a full node.
It's funny that you mentioned that because that's one of the things I've been working on is actually providing a Docker instance for Red Hat, Enterprise Linux, Fedora, CentOS, and as you probably know, Red Hat has a partnership with Microsoft through their Azure platform. Never thought I'd see the day, but that is the way. It's very nice, and so you'll be able to run Bitcore in a Docker instance or in a Linux container on the Azure platform as well as the Red Hat platform.
Right. So what is the range of places I can run the Bitcore code? You know, can I run it on my Raspberry Pi? Can I run it on my Android phone? Or do I need to have IBM Watson to run it?
No, actually, you can run it on pretty modest hardware. We do have a couple of patches that make it run on the Raspberry Pi. However, I think Braden was mentioning that we're trying to optimize it for memory because we don't want people to have the very latest Raspberry Pis that have, a gig or so of RAM. We want to be able to run this thing on a 512 meg modest hardware, either your phone or a Raspberry Pi that has modest specs. So there's some patches there. So we'd love to help people get it running on that. It's in the current, branch or the current release. It's currently not supported on that, but we're more than happy to help people in the forum on Bitcore.io.
Awesome. And speaking about helping people, I want to come back in just a minute and we'll ask if there's anything that we didn't ask. We'll ask you that question. Is there anything that we didn't ask? So be thinking about that for just a minute here. And while we do that, let's talk about DigitalOcean. Whether you're an experienced code warrior or just getting started, you need flexible, reliable, and affordable hosting. And that's where DigitalOcean comes in. They provide developers with Droplets, which are virtual private servers that can be customized and deployed quickly to host websites, web apps, production applications, personal projects, virtual desktops, almost anything you can think of with full root access. And if you're like me, you like to tinker with things, you know that full root access is really, really important. DigitalOcean is built for developers. It's used by over 400,000 developers. I've tinkered with it as well. And you can deploy and configure your droplets via a control panel or a simple API. You can choose your OS. So you can choose Ubuntu if you're an Ubuntu fan, CentOS if you're a Red Hat fan, Debian, Fedora, again, for Red Hat, CoreOS, FreeBSD. I really like that they support all of these different OS choices, which are great. And if you're a developer, you want to deploy apps like Django, Docker, Drupal, LAMP, all of these tools and utilities they have available with DigitalOcean. Servers can have up to 20 CPUs, 64 gigabytes, holy moly, of RAM, and 640 gigabytes of SSD hard drive space. So you know that your applications are going to run fast. You can also deploy servers in regions all over the world with gigabit speeds, and they offer 99.99% uptime, which is fantastic when you consider the amount of extra maintenance that they have to do to keep you up and running. That's great. Web console access with HTML5. They offer SSH, SFTP, KVM, and VNC for virtual desktops, so you can access your applications running anytime you want from anywhere. They have an extremely active community, which we love here on Floss Weekly, a large and detailed set of tutorials on all the ways you can use your droplets. You want to deploy Docker, set up a mail server, they've got you covered. It's quick and easy. DigitalOcean has incredibly affordable and straightforward pricing. Servers start at only $5 per month. There's also hourly pricing available starting at less than a penny per hour, but we're going to make it so you can get started today and deploy an SSD cloud server for free. That's right, for free. Visit DigitalOcean.com and create an account. Once you confirm your email and account information, go to the billing section and enter the promo code FLOSS for a free $10 credit. That's plenty to get started, and you can explore what DigitalOcean can do for you. That's DigitalOcean.com, and once you sign up, enter the code FLOSS. That's F-L-O-S-S. I need to make sure I spell that right. In the billing section for a $10 credit, and we thank them for their support of Floss Weekly. All right, so we are back and with our guests, and we want to ask them the question I mentioned before. Hopefully, they've been putting their thinking caps on. Are there any questions that we have not asked that you really want people to know about? Maybe we'll start with Braden.
Actually, I think we've covered everything.
That's good. If there's nothing left, man, we've done a great job. Simon and I are professionals, man. We know our stuff. Chris, how about you? Is there anything that we haven't mentioned? What about ways for people to get involved? What's the easiest way for someone that wants to contribute and get involved with the project? How can they do that?
Well, the best way would be to go to bitcore.io, and they can see the forum, and they can see what people are asking and get to know and use some of the examples. We have both examples, and we have sample code that you can see, and it's very well laid out. We've tested this code with other people and asked them to follow these directions and give us their feedback. And so it's worked really hard on that site to make sure it's very user-friendly and inclusive to all different types of developers and people that might want to use this. And then the Playground, I was really impressed when I first saw the Playground. I didn't really have anything to do with it before I joined, and I was really impressed with that. So if you want to kick the tires of Bitcore without committing yourself to downloading the bits onto your hard drive, then you can always go there and just play around. And I think once people start to use that Playground and start to use the forum and start to look at the examples, they'll be hooked. It's much easier to bootstrap yourself into the world of cryptocurrencies in general if you look there, because it's just a great thing.
Okay. Now, Chris, I see that you've been to the Scale conference in LA. Are any of you people going to be at Scale on January 21st to 24th this year?
I haven't been. I think it was Braden.
Yeah, that was me, actually.
Oh, sorry, that's Braden, not Chris. There we are. Yeah. I can't even read my own briefing notes. So tell me, Braden, are you going to Scale?
No, and probably unfortunately not, because I'm over in Atlanta now. But I went to Scale several times while I was in Los Angeles, and that's actually how I learned a lot about picking up Ubuntu and Debian and stuff like that. So
same, because I reckon there'll be a lot of people who are watching and listening who will be showing up at Scale and would probably have had questions to ask if you had been over there, because there's nothing like that over the Atlanta area, as far as I know.
Yeah, that's not. There, I don't know of anything. Yeah.
Yeah, there's something called Dev Nexus that we have every year in Atlanta. It's a really good conference. I've been to that a couple times. So Dev Nexus if you're in the area.
Great. Yeah, nice. So Braden, one more question I had was we talked this whole show basically about what's new with BitCore, but what's next for BitCore? Where are you guys headed? What are you looking to develop and change in the future?
So yeah, right now we're working on some memory optimizations for very large queries, and then we're also working, as Chris mentioned, on expanding it to different platforms, FreeBSD and whatnot. So that's pretty much I think what we have planned currently is optimizations there.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, we've come to the end of the show. We've got to wrap up. And to do that, we always have a couple of questions that we have to ask so we don't get in trouble. People like to know these things. They're very important questions. So we'll start with Chris. Chris, what is your favorite text editor?
Oh, I'm definitely a VI person.
So VI. Nice. Nice. I like it. Braden, how about you?
I use Emacs.
Oh man! Okay, well, we're. I guess if Randall were here, he'd be happy, and I'd be happy.
They're in the same company, and yet there's like dogs and cats programming together.
Well, that's the great thing about open source, right? I mean, you can pick and choose what you want to use. You're not forced to use one or the other. Yeah. Great. So let's go back to Chris and talk about your favorite scripting language.
I think I'm a JavaScript guy. I've been converted. I did Ruby for many years, and then once I joined this company and saw what the power of JavaScript could do, I'm a JavaScript person now.
Yeah, I had a feeling you were going to say that. Braden, how about you?
Yeah, JavaScript as well.
Yeah. I figured, or else you might have chosen a different project to work on. It sounds like the JavaScript skills are necessary for what you guys are doing. Excellent. Yeah. Well, thank you guys for being here today. We really appreciate it, and I know I've learned a lot. So thank you for coming on and giving us an update on BitCore.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you.
All right.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
You bet. You bet. BitCore. Wow. This has been a good show for me because, like I said, I didn't know much about it before, and now I have a much better understanding. Hopefully our audience does as well. Simon, what do you think about the updates in BitCore?
Well, it also actually sounds a good deal easier to use than the last time we talked about it. I've just bought myself a really cheap PC to use as a local cloud server here in on my office network. And I think I'm going to try spinning up a container with this inside and have a play with it, see how I get on with it. It sounds quite promising. I'll be interested to see just which directions people take it in the community, because it's all very much associated with their multi-tenant Bitcoin wallet technology at the moment that their company has. But it all looks pretty promising to me, and I do want to have a play with it.
Yeah, definitely. I'm sure you guys talked about this on the last episode, but it was interesting to me when they said they were using the MIT license. That kind of surprised me a little bit, but I'm sure you guys covered that probably on the last time you talked to them. So we'll have to go back and take a look at that. Any thoughts on MIT license these days? How are you? you're always the expert that I go to with any open source license questions.
Well, I'd say that the MIT license is makes me suspicious when I see it on new projects. Generally speaking, people who want to use a minimal license, I would expect to be using the Apache license because MIT and BSD licenses, when used on new projects, tend to be indicative that there might be patent or intellectual property issues that the company would rather weren't scrutinized too closely. But there's really no problem with it. You can do whatever you like with the code. All you have to do is minimal compliance with the authorship notification requirements of the license. So it's a very clean license to use. Means you can do whatever you wish without needing to have a relationship with them.
So there you go. You heard it first from Simon. I love getting those insights from you. That's perfect. Speaking of getting insights from people, you can get insights from us on a weekly basis here at 9:30 a.m. our new time, 9:30 a.m. on Tuesdays on the Twit Network. So if you're catching this in post, if you downloaded the show and you'd like to join us live, that's when you can do it, is 9:30. And here's a sample of what we'll be talking about in the coming weeks. So let's see. I think next week, January 12th, we have MuseScore. And this is something I'm familiar with a little bit because my son, who's heavily involved in music, actually has used MuseScore to do some, I want to say transcoding. What do they do in music? It's not transcoding. they translate the music from one instrument to the other, whatever that is. Thank you. Transcribe. I'm not a music guy. I don't know. Transcode sounds a lot better to me. But yeah, that's what they do. And he's done that, and he's written some stuff using MuseScore. So I'm going to have to tune in for that one or have him listen to it after the fact. I think he'd be really interested in that. And then coming up on January 19th, we have BookType. BookType allows authors to create beautiful books for print and digital distribution. So publishers can use BookType to manage their entire catalog in one place, providing authors, translators, and proofreaders with all the tools they need to do it. And it's going to be interesting to see how they're using open source to make that particular project possible. And then on January 26th, we have Open Unison. I almost said the wrong word. Open Unison, which is a new approach to identity management that combines web access management provisioning services into a single system. So that's going to be interesting as well. That's what's coming up in the next few weeks. Simon, what's coming up for you? Where can people find out more about what you're working on and talking about?
Well, I quit my job at the Indian company that I worked at last year, and I'm now an independent consultant again with my own company, Mesh Insights Limited in the UK. You can find out all about me at my personal website, webmink.com, which is on screen if you're watching the video. I'm going to be at FOSDEM in Brussels, which is the mother and father of all open source and free software conferences. It's happening over the weekend of the 30th and 31st of January this year at the Free University of Brussels. And if you're going, do please send me a message so that I can meet up with you. I tend not to go to the really big beer drinking activities. I tend to frequent the quieter ones. And I also drink a lot of tea and coffee while I'm there. Then after that, I'll be doing a lot of sitting around at home wondering what to do next all the way through until OSCON, which is happening in May. And so I'll be trying to write articles for InfoWorld. You will hopefully find me showing up in InfoWorld again starting the middle of this month because they're happy to have me back as a writer again. That's about it, really. Leading a very quiet life here in the south of England. What are you up to, Aaron?
Well, it doesn't sound quiet to me at all. It sounds like you're pretty busy. And I know I follow you on Google Plus and kind of watch your blogs, and your website is great. You write great blog posts, really interesting. So people that are interested in what's going on in the world of open source software and otherwise should definitely follow you. As for me, that's the best place to follow me as well is on Google Plus. I always post to Google Plus first, and then it goes out to Twitter and Facebook. You can follow me there as well if you want. Right now, I'm busy getting ready for Benicia Mini Maker Faire that's coming up in April. If you're in the Bay Area, April 16th is the magic date. It's a small little maker fair. Much smaller than the big one down in San Mateo, but you can see a lot more things and interact with people that are building really cool projects and doing cool work. And so I'd highly recommend checking it out, both as an attendee or also as a maker. We're sending out our call for makers here just in a few weeks. And if you have a project, if you're in the Bay Area, you've got a project you're working on and you'd like to show it off, Benicia Mini Maker Faire is a great place to do that. So I'd highly encourage you to check that out. Other than that, just working at NetApp, enjoying my work that I do there. And there, I want to thank them for graciously allowing me the time to come do this podcast and host it for all of you guys. So they're very gracious in that way. You can always tune into what we're talking about here on this show or on any of the shows on the Twit Network, in fact, just by tuning into live.twit.tv. And you can watch the show being streamed live at 9:30 a.m., as I mentioned, on Tuesday or anytime. You can also join us on irc.twit.tv and ask questions. We do like to get in questions from the chat room because that's what makes the show more interesting, actually, I think, is getting your questions, because a lot of times you have better insights than we do, as a matter of fact. So Oh, there goes the dog. Okay, so here's the thing, guys. Today, I took the phone. This show is literally off the hook. If you've ever watched me do the show, you know that I this phone always rings whenever I do the show. And so today, I took the phone off the hook, especially so we wouldn't be disturbed during the show. And apparently, someone's trying to deliver a package, and my dog goes nuts. It's the curse of Twit, I say. It's the curse of Twit. But anyway, so that's our show for today. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next time on Floss Weekly.